It's time to get organized with Dr. Craig and Citizen Action. Working for democracy and taking on economic, racial, and environmental issues across Wisconsin and around the United States, here's Earl Ingram with Dr. Robert Craig.
All right, welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And it is that time that I once again have an opportunity to bring a good friend and certainly a political giant back before this listening audience. And I'm always so excited to have my good long-standing friend, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action at the Vanguard, as we struggle through these, you know, really difficult times in this nation. Good morning and welcome back, Dr. Robert Craig. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Earl. How are you doing?
I'm doing, I'm doing fine, but I'm living on the edge, as many American citizens are right now. And I just wanted to ask you, because again, with all of your political acumen and you being a political historian, understanding the inner workings of our government is about as well as anybody I know. Is our nation's democracy in jeopardy?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's become clearer to a whole lot more people, Earl. There were a lot of people who didn't want to believe that because, let's face it, it's been part and parcel of American political rhetoric to make big claims, right? Big threatening claims about bad things that are going to happen. And so a lot of people may not listen to that, but just the visual of it on social media constantly of masked federal agents, you know, tear gassing kids, kidnapping kids, right, and taking them to and their families, taking them to detention centers in Texas, screwing them away, shooting peaceful protesters, killing them. It just goes on and on and on. And in Portland, they tear gassed a whole bunch of kids, for example. The specter of it, the visual of it. They haven't been able to, the disinformation coming from the regime it's been unmasked for many people by the images. When Kristi Noem or Stephen Miller or Donald Trump stand up there and claim that the protesters were violent insurrectionists and domestic terrorists, and that they threatened the agents, and you see the videos and no such thing happened, right? So, you know, the old cliche, a picture is worth 1,000 words, but nowadays a video is worth even more than 1,000 words.
You know, Dr. Craig, as we watch the visual, it harkens back to 1963 in Birmingham, and as the nation watched, you know, police dogs and water hoses being unleashed on children in Bull Connor and Birmingham's police commissioner, you know, believing that brutality could preserve order. And we're watching this play out again, Dr. Craig. You know, the nation and others inside the nation would not tolerate that, did not tolerate that, and it helped change the trajectory of things. Do you kind of see maybe that the society is going to rise up once again, and maybe we can get beyond this?
I think we need to distinguish between the visible edge of tyranny and metaphorically the top of the iceberg and the much larger iceberg that you can't see that's under the water, right?
Right.
So in Birmingham, the reaction of Bull Connor, the infamous police chief, and the sicking police dogs on people and fire hosing them, that made visible, unmasked for the whole country, what Jim Crow had been for 100 years, right?
Right.
Black folks in the South had faced that violence and oppression. It had been swept under the rug, and a lot of, especially white America, lived in a dreamland where this wasn't the case, where we didn't have a huge section of the country where we didn't have democracy, didn't have freedom, where the Constitution didn't pertain if you were Black. So you have to, and the reasons for that and the roots of that were much deeper. And we know that when Martin Luther King Jr. died, we recently celebrated Martin Luther King Day, he was not satisfied with the Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Act. Those helped prevent, give people the right to vote, prevent the outright segregation, the segregated washrooms, fountains, lunch counters, et cetera, everything else, public transit. But didn't deal with the fundamental economic inequality that the systems of slavery and Jim Crow had created and that was still cemented in place. And that's why he was leading the Poor People's Campaign when his life was taken away. And we never addressed that second part. And that's why we still have massive racial inequality, where Black folks are doing far worse than white folks by every measure. And we are absolutely equal human beings in every single respect. Any difference in racial outcomes like wealth, economic status, everything else has to do with our society and what it is doing now, what it has done in the past, a legacy discrimination. It's nothing to do, but boy, the right's been very good at blaming people, the victims, right? Blaming people who are not responsible at all, who can't get health care, decent, solid access to food and shelter, everything else. So fast forwarding to now world, the reason that democracy is at risk is because democracy stopped delivering to people. People, it's kind of been lost to history. I mean, you can find it very easily if you look, that during the Great Depression, when we had the stock market crash in 1929, and Herbert Hoover refused to do anything that would actually deal with the situation, deal with the question, where people were thrown out of their homes, their jobs, were in soup lines, right? Were desperate. You had tens of thousands of people just roaming the countryside looking for sustenance. There was a real threat to democracy at that time. In fact, because democracy had not delivered for people, because it wasn't working. And it wasn't working around the world either, in Europe. And European country after European country was becoming authoritarian. And so there were many who pressed upon, many top people, most influential people in the country, that pressed upon Franklin Delano Roosevelt when he was elected that he needed to suspend Congress, that you couldn't do it through democracy. And he resisted doing so. And the success of the New Deal, ultimately, with fits and starts, is what restored democracy, because democracy started working again for people. He feared, though, at the time, in 1933, that he'd be the last president. In other words, if he failed, there'd never be another American president. There wouldn't be a democracy. So I think we're in a similar situation now because of the massive wealth inequality that was deliberately created in a bipartisan basis at the behest of the wealthiest people and the largest corporations, which has extracted $79 trillion over the last half century from middle class and the working class and put it to the top. And that's why people can't afford things. They make less than they should, and monopoly power of those corporations has raised prices dramatically. They have that pricing power. So when we talk about affordability, people see it as a separate issue. It's actually part and parcel of the crisis in democracy, and we need to address that as people's inability to afford health care, housing, everything else, all the other basics, if we're going to make democracy stable. And authoritarians feed off it. Donald Trump is in office because he convinced enough people that it was someone else's fault, that it was Black folks, that it was immigrants, that it was trans teens, as bizarre as that is, whatever victim, enemy they wanted to scapegoat, they wanted to identify, because people were frustrated about a real problem. That is, they feeling they don't have the same life prospects, that this is the first generation of young people who are doing much worse than their parents.
You know, Dr. Craig, you just a whole litany of things and right on point with all of them. But out of all the things that you just mentioned, when you talked about $70 trillion that were taken away, You know, I lived during that period of time as an adult, and over that last half century, not as a boy, but as an adult, this past half century, and so I saw middle class America. I lived that middle class American dream, and I saw that, as you just stated, just being taken away. And at the same time, you know, in the 70s, I don't know, there might have been 30 billionaires in America. Now there's over 940 or somewhere. The numbers are so skewed. And so I understood why people were believing that democracy wasn't delivering for them. And so they chose a path that they believed was going to bring democracy back to them, and it was going to balance the scales of injustice. But they found out that this is even worse, because again, they thought that a man had promised them that he was going to, you know, make groceries more affordable, and people aren't asking for a whole lot, Dr. Craig, just by saying, hey, we're in America, we want to be able to put decent food on the table. We're not Bangladesh. So if we're asking for that, saying, Dr. Craig, then I think, you know, that should have been something that people thought the present president could deliver on. But he hasn't even addressed those things. Those things don't even come to his mind. And yet he's moving all over the country telling people how great it is, how great the economy is. And so people who thought that, you know, this was going to be, you know, somebody who was going to address these issues, Dr. Craig, he's not. This is not going to be fixed with a change in the midterms. When will people ever start seeing some hope in this nation again? The average person.
Well, it depends on all of us, people who are active, people who we need to inspire to be active. Look, Donald Trump is a cartoonish version of what's been going on for a long time. I mean, standing in front of the groceries, having all of the meat out in 90-degree weather and photo ops with it, right? Yeah, remember that? Bizarre press conferences. And then he had no intention of doing any of it, didn't even try. He didn't have failed policies. He had no policies. In fact, the policies he has had, like his healthcare policies, are raising the cost of an already unaffordable necessity, right? And tariffs, same thing, making prices higher, not lower. But let's face it, the whole political system has failed for decades, Earl, to deliver affordability. Right. Democrats have promised that they want to make healthcare affordable for people, make it a right. We can talk about whose fault it is and how Republicans sabotage, but they haven't done it, right?
Right.
And there are consequences. And the problem is that we tend to think of democracy just as a procedure we all learned in civics class we're all supposed to have. We believe in democracy. It only is stable if it actually works as a form of governing, if it actually produces government in the public interest and people can see it that way. When it doesn't do that, people are not going to stand behind it because they learned in civics class that we're supposed to have a democracy. So that is the fundamental problem. And I think it only begins to change, Earl, when we have more candidates running on real solutions. You see, Donald Trump is dangerous on affordability, very vulnerable in his party, and they could be massively killed in the midterms if there are fair midterms, if Trump allows, doesn't intervene to disrupt the midterms, which he is trying to do. He has made that clear. But let's say that we have these midterm elections, and the Democrats promise we're going to do affordability. Well, if they don't run anything that will make life affordable, right, which is both what things cost and what we make, it's those things together, right, that's a trap. Then affordability is an opportunity. It's a trap because then you get blamed for not making things affordable and you further undermine democracy. And there are some candidates running on real clear solutions the public can get their mind around, it really would make a difference. And there are others there running on talking points and small technical fixes that won't really even move the ball for average people. And those second group are threatened to end democracy by doing that, by winning elections that way and then not delivering. And they're not going to decide. Election officials are not the wise people. They're not the people who sit around and decide what's best in the public interest. They respond to incentives. They're politicians. It has to do with us being organized enough as constituents, as organized groups of people, to make them do it. And that's why something like a primary election with seven Democrats in the Democratic primary for governor is a huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity to engage these folks and try to push all of them to offer real, concrete, tangible solutions that they will then fight for and achieve, and to push all of them and to try to and try to make sure that the one that wins, the one that comes on top, is committed to doing that and actually does it. And you know, you see a huge contrast, Earl, between, say, Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, the new governor who ran on affordability. But if you look at her agenda, it's a bunch of solutionettes. It's like and technical things that will not do anything. Or Zoran Mandani in New York, who offers clear, tangible, difficult to accomplish things like fast, free buses. Like, I'm going to freeze the rent because they have rent control authority. I'm going to raise the minimum wage to $30. Those are clear, tangible things. He may not be able to achieve them, but he has made it clear to the public what he's trying to do and what he really would do. If he accomplishes much of it, he will make a tangible difference for struggling working people. Don't know he did it.
You know, Dr. Craig, you just stole my thunder. I was going to talk about Mandani and the fact that guys and young up and coming aspiring politicians such as he are able to, you know, they're a new beginning, I think, Dr. Craig. And hopefully the future of the kind of leadership that's going to be needed to take this nation, after you and I are gone, in the direction that it needs to go. We can no longer be caught in the dark ages anymore with the way the parties are being run. People have no faith, very little faith in our government, and rightfully so. Because it doesn't matter who's in office. You just said it, 70 some odd trillion dollars. Democrats and Republicans both were in office during that last half century. And things just continue to go down the wrong path. So democracy as we know it, Dr. Craig, as I asked before, We've got a president that said the Republicans should run the elections. The fact that he could go on national television and have a bunch of other senators and congressmen standing behind him and say we should run the elections, and there was a time, Dr. Craig, when no one would have that kind of, well, I wouldn't say courage, but folly to do something as crazy as that. But he's serious.
Oh, he's very serious, Earl. And let me break down the $79 trillion, Earl.
Okay.
If you broke it down per individual, per income earner, the average person would make $28,000 more a year if we had the income distribution now that we had in 1975.
Wow.
So that is... things would be a whole lot more affordable if everyone made on average $28,000 more a year, every wage earner. That's not every household, that's every wage earner. That's how much money. That's why all the super yachts and the support yachts for the super yachts are being built. And why all the private jets and bigger and bigger jets are flying all about, because that's where the money went. And the healthcare money that's going to make healthcare much worse, it was already a crisis, is going to massive tax cuts for billionaires and for big corporations, and to massively expand all these armed masked federal agents who are abusing constitutional rights in the Twin Cities, They were in Chicago. They've been in Portland. They are about to invade, if they can, Springfield, Ohio, and go after Haitian folks who had legal status. Trump has tried to take away. They have nowhere to go. They're not safe for them to go back to Haiti. So that is what we're looking at. But it's even more than just the heist, the great heist of the $79 trillion by the wealthiest and most powerful people in our society. It's also because, and this has been very bipartisan, government that can't seem to accomplish anything anymore. You know, the amazing thing about the New Deal is how many big things they were able to do quickly, right? Just get them done. And how World War II and the World War II war effort is an example of that too. But now, my goodness, very little high-speed rail has been built despite massive investments. Very little rural broadband, right? Almost everything the government tries to do takes forever. I mean, charging stations for EVs, that was part of President Biden's agenda, because government has just been undermined so much it can't get anything done for average people. The only thing it can get done is helping the wealthy get bigger and bigger share. It's very effective at that. It's very ineffective for average people. Why is mass transit so bad, right? Why are public schools so underfunded? You go on and on and on, Earl. This has an effect upon people's commitment to democracy. Okay, so it's not just some kind of personal economic issue. It has to do with commitment to the system. It's very legitimacy. And so we have to be committed. There have been a whole series of books written about how from the 1970s forward, both parties worked to make government very ineffective in being able to achieve anything other than what I said, the heist.
You know,
you got global trade agreements that corporate lawyers wrote, but we can't get much decent public services the way we used to 50, 75, 100 years ago.
You know, Dr. Craig, a half a century ago, I was a young, wide-eyed guy who, you know, remembered reading about the dumbing down of the American people. I remember the first time that I read that, and I was in my 20s. And I didn't know it was a book written, you know, 60 Minutes, another, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of them were talking about the dumbing down of the American people. And part of that has happened, Dr. Craig. Part of that has happened, and, you know, I'm not saying this from the perspective of to insult people. I'm saying it because they created all these other things, ancillary things around the American people that took our eyes off of the ball of what was really important in the society. And we spent so much time, Dr. Craig, talking about individualism. Our parents didn't talk about individualism as much. They knew. Maybe it's because they didn't have all the different things going on around them that we did that took us away from what built our nation to be what it is. And now, Dr. Craig, the more you watch it, the more you just figure that this thing has gotten so far out of kilter that even if, like you said, even if the Democrats win the midterm, you know, there's hope. There's, you know, it's always hope, but, you know, you just think that this ship has sailed so far down the river. For heaven's sakes, Dr. Craig, a month ago, or less than a month ago, we invaded Venezuela. It was front page news. It was everything that people were talking about. We're not talking about Venezuela anymore. We're talking about the fact that now Donald Trump is giving an ultimatum to Iran and really using the term war. He's talking about this on national television, Dr. Craig. We're also, the other things that are taking place, well, we're going to nationalize the elections. I mean, all of these different things happening that are so unbelievable to the American people that they, but the American people continue to wonder why they can't afford to buy food. Dr. Craig, every time I go in the grocery store, and it's just my wife and I and a young man that we're raising, I can't leave the store without spending $60-$70. And I'm not saying this in an arrogant way. I can afford to pay it. But Sandy, I'm not talking about me. It's all of the people who, when I was bringing my family up and was a young person, who I see struggling. They can't afford that $70 to every time they go into the grocery store. They don't have it. But those are the issues, Dr. Craig, you know, that now don't seem to be addressed, and we can't fix it because it all of these other things that the president and the Republicans just keep on throwing out. And so it's almost like the Democrats are playing defensive. The Democrats are defending. It's like football against all of this. And so when do we get to the nuts and bolts, the meat and potatoes, Dr. Craig, of what's happening?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And earlier in your statement, earlier you talked about individualism.
Yes.
So I do think that that's partly where things went wrong, where, look, individuals are very important, right? A liberal democracy protects people's individual freedom to determine their own destiny, right? But it went too far. It missed the point that unless you are also committed to a common project and a common good, then people aren't going to be individually free either, right? So it became overbalanced the other way. You have to understand that having a very effective, well-resourced public education system is essential to everyone's freedom, and therefore we need to fight together to make sure we have it. And we don't pull up the bridge. I mean, we got good education, but then the behind us don't, right? And so that's what needs to be rebuilt. But fascism feeds off that, right? Feeds off grievance, feeds off this idea that we don't have a responsibility for anyone else. I mean, Donald Trump's very much like some kind of character from those Taylor Sheridan series, right? where he just believes that the strong should just grab everything they can get, and that's the way the world ought to work, and that's just. And the problem is that we have a society where a large percentage of the population has supported a person saying that. It shows how alienated they are. And they're alienated in part because they're not wrong that the system's been rigged against them. And that's a bipartisan thing. Progressives think that, but so do MAGA folks, right? Where the MAGA folks are wrong is who rigged it, right? And who is responsible for their plight, right? When rural areas keep dying and the young people move away because they don't have opportunities there, and there's great grievance about that, it is not the fault of Black people in Milwaukee. That is something that the powerful that are doing this are selling you in order to maintain power and begin to enrich themselves, right? Continue to do that. That's what it is. But we have to offer something real for people. We can't just point out that that's false. That's what too many liberals have just thought, that going to social media and pointing out that they're wrong and that they're inaccurate and the facts are wrong, all the facts checkers, somehow is going to turn things around. Now, you have to deal with the fundamental reasons people have walked away from democracy and make democracy actually deliver again, and has to deliver a broader prosperity for everyone and act in the common interest, which means the only way to get there, Earl, is a lot more people joining groups that are actually engaged in policymaking and trying to push for major changes in our society, because only that can take away the power from all of the corporate lobbyists that infest the state capital and the national capital and are busy rigging the economy in every which way they can against all of us. I mean, right now with the data centers, Earl, which are proceeding, right? And with now enough resistance from very few are resisting strongly. I mean, average people are, but I'm talking about elected leaders, right?
Right.
Look, that's the big tech and the big utilities getting together to basically extract more from all of us and leave very little behind, and leave us on the hook for massive new fossil fuel plants that are going to drive further global warming, the climate crisis, and more health effects, right? That we will pay for because they will walk away. But average people, it's fascinating. Like the resistance in Port Washington, as this continues in Port Washington, is very bipartisan. I mean, right-wing farmers are as upset about it as environmentalists are, right? And they're being ignored, which tells you how far democracy has atrophied, that there's this public, and in fact, this is nationally true, there's public outrage at the building of these data centers, yet they continue to get built. That means you live in a non-democracy already, and that Democrats are participating in that as well, many of them. There are some that are speaking up, but many of them are trying to do some things to make a little better, but they're not taking on the problem seriously. We cannot build all of these plants without making sure that they pay for all the energy and making sure that we can still reduce greenhouse gas emissions enough to prevent runaway climate change that threatens all future generations, our children and our children's children.
So, Dr. Craig, it's for the lack of knowledge. And so when the data centers and the people who come into rural areas and that are struggling economically, and it's not like they're building manufacturing companies. And so they're in these areas, there are people who know that their towns are struggling, and they get fed this false bill of goods that, listen, we're bringing this into your area. It's going to increase, you know, the price of everything you have here, your homes, and because we're building something that is going to have, you know, a positive impact on your community. And I drive past the place out here, Dr. Craig, where they were going to build Foxconn. Mm-hmm. And I look at the massive area. I don't know if you've been out there recently, but man, they're getting ready to build a couple of those things. And it's just massive. And you can't even believe what it's going to wind up costing the people who live in the area. Yet I was listening to some of the elected officials in Racine who are saying, well, it's going to put us on the map. Yeah, well, it may put you on the map. But as you stated before, Dr. Craig, is it going to be in a positive way? Is it going to impact and make a difference in the citizens who live in Racine? I get it. They were sold a false bill of goods with Foxconn, and it sat there, and they invested a lot of money, and they wound up, you know, losing a lot. And now these people come in with another false dream, and the elected officials, look, go right along with it. You talk about the lobbyists, Dr. Craig. Part of what I think that the American people don't understand in our government is lobbyists. They believe that when we elect our officials, that our officials are then going to do the bidding for the American people. This is where I think so many of the American people believe that's how our government works. And we put those people in office, I don't care whether it's on the state level, local level, national level, and because we elected them, they're going to be our representatives. Dr. Craig, that's what a representative government is. Those people will then represent us. But if the people don't know about those lobbyists you talk about, and yet those are the ones, right? The fact that people don't know that lobbyists come in and control your elected official. We've got to find a better way to educate the populace. Isn't that so?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And there's, when enough public outrage is built up, that's what led to the progressive era in Wisconsin and fighting Bob La Follette. He swept those politicians out of office by pointing that out to people effectively and mobilizing the people. It doesn't have to be all the people, actually.
You said 3.5%.
An organized group of people can be loud enough at the state capitol to overwhelm the lobbyists, but there just have to be enough people, and they have to be in all the districts, or all the districts that could affect a vote, right, in the legislature. But it is amazing. In the aughts, when I was a young lobbyist for a labor union, I was stunned, frankly, even though I read plenty of history and political science and shouldn't have been stunned, Earl, but I was stunned how faint the public voice was in that building, and how strong every major lobbying entity's voice was. They'd call them the stakeholders, and it would be like, we need these seven stakeholders in the room, and oh, we should have someone represent the public, someone who doesn't have any lawyers or lobbyists or anything else. Like, oh, that's going to go well, right? But the people can take it back. It's surprising. That's what our organization, Citizen Action Wisconsin, does, but there are others that do the same thing. But small groups of organized people can take back a democracy and then show to everyone else, get other people by results, right? Because that's the basis then when things start working better and there's hope and candidates running on clear things, that other people you talk to in the north side of Milwaukee are young black men who rightly so have no reason to believe that any of these politicians making them promises is going to make any bit of difference in their life. To start to see that's not the case, to have their hope pricked up. But to do that, there needs to be a vanguard that starts to get that going in a serious way and puts serious options on the table, so you can tell the difference between the elected leader that will represent people and their interests and the ones that won't. Now it's hard to tell.
Do you think, Dr. Craig, that they have finally, pushed or they're pushing a little bit too hard, and they're rallying. They're going to rally the American people. The American people have been slumbering for a long time, and so now, they're watching these things and they're feeling the pain. Job losses, are starting to pile up. You were hearing about the growth in the economy and all those kind of things, and people are saying, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not seeing and feeling any of that. Okay? I mean, I vote a certain way, but nothing's changing for me. Dr. Craig, aren't we coming to a pressure point in this nation? I don't know. It may explode in another year. We're on the precipice of it, I think, with what we're seeing in Minnesota and other places. But this government is going to be pressed and forced into realizing that the American people are who the government should be representing, not corporations.
Well, I think what a lot of courageous and disciplined people are doing in Minnesota, what they did in Illinois before when ICE was there, is critical, right? It has slowed down the offensive, right? It's put them on the defensive, partly because of their acts of totalitarian aggression and homicide, right? Leading up to homicide. But it doesn't mean the threat is over. They are regrouping. They're trying to figure out where else to attack. It sounds like they're going to, as of the day we're recording here, slightly reduce the number of officers in Minnesota, but that's just going to be probably so they can dump them into Springfield, Ohio, and go after Haitian folks. And so the threat's far from over, but we'd be in much worse shape if average people hadn't mobilized and been disciplined and had their orange whistles and been ready. It's happening in Maine. It's happening in a lot of places because Maine is also targeted because there are Somalis there. Minnesota would not have been targeted if they hadn't been welcoming the Somali refugees. This is this targeting, Trump is very clear, is based on race. And racial bias and attempting to foment those divisions in the most horrific and damaging possible way. But we need to, so it's an opportunity what people are doing this moment where Trump is unpopular. We don't know what's going to happen in the global situation, what unexpected events might help him or hurt him. But he's far from defeated. He's certainly acting like he wants to try to disrupt the midterms. And so we can't only think about the election. We need to think about the frontal resistance. But as I was saying before, we need to have a fuller understanding of why we're at this place. And if the Democrats are able to hold him off, win Congress, win the presidency, if you don't make democracy start delivering for people and deal with the fundamentals of the affordability crisis, why housing is so unaffordable in this country, why healthcare is not a right, it's the opposite. It's a commodity, and if, how much money you have and whether you're fortunate enough to have the right coverage is everything. I go on and on, right? Utility rates are already unaffordable. They're going to be made even more unaffordable by the data centers. If we don't start addressing that, this crisis will continue. And the risk, Earl, is we don't know if it's going to go. But maybe Trump doesn't succeed, but maybe a kind of more sophisticated authoritarian who seems not as outrageous as Trump then succeeds, because the underlying grievances and the underlying crisis in democracy hasn't been addressed.
Dr. Craig, do you think the Democratic Party has learned its lesson? As I watch the speaker, Jeffries, and... It's clearly, his message is clearly different than the Nancy Pelosi had in her time. Do you think that the Democrats have learned the lesson, and if given the opportunity, will work towards the very things that you are talking about?
And it's hard to talk about the Democrat Party as a unified thing.
Yes.
Right? Independently elected folks. I mean, Will Rogers, the comedian from the 1920s era, once said that I'm not part of an organized party, I'm a Democrat. And that's still true. And so parts of the party, certain elected officials, have learned it. Others have not. Others have learned part of the lesson and not other parts of the lesson. So one lesson they've learned, Earl, I think. Remember, they decided in the spring that it was too damaging to let the government close, and so they voted for all of Trump's funding packages, right? And they received massive public backlash for that. Now that so they didn't become wiser. They got blowback from their own constituents, from organized people, right? So this was a victory of democracy. And then they moved. And so the next time they did, over the Affordable Care Act subsidies expiring and many people's insurance premiums doubling, when that doesn't include co-pays and deductibles and everything else, shut down the government for a long time, the longest actually in history. But then six or seven bolted in the Senate and undercut all of their colleagues and reopen the government. They're now refused to not close the government again unless they were able to negotiate over new restrictions on ICE. And Department of Homeland Security, therefore, now has 2 weeks of funding. It's going to expire again. That sign of fighting, we don't know if they'll fight for enough. But they've learned they have to fight at that level. What they haven't all learned is that the threat to democracy is more than the frontal assault by Trump. It is also the fact that that the affordability crisis indicates that people don't think government delivering for them. Do you know, Earl, that 2/3 of Americans believe that a middle class lifestyle is beyond the reach of most people? 2/3 of Americans, that's a New York Times Siena poll. That's how deep the crisis is. They need to address that crisis in fundamental ways. They can't just speak to it, promise affordability and not deliver. Like, we're working on a $20 minimum wage in Wisconsin. That is an essential part of this. Part of the affordability thing is that people don't have enough money. The other part is the power of corporations to just price gouge, right? It's both of those together. And do all Democrats support that yet? No. Are we making progress on that? Yes. So that's where a lot of the fight is, doing something like that, getting the Democratic Party committed, and then actually achieving it if they win power in this next election in the Wisconsin legislature and the governor's race, is an essential part of saving democracy. So I think leaders like Jeffries have learned part of the lesson, but there's more of the lesson that they still need to learn.
You know, Dr. Craig, it used to be an honor to say that the Democrats come from a big tent. And they would always say, oh, we come from a big tent. And, you know, I don't know if it's been such a good thing to come from a big tent. Because coming from a big tent meant that you were splintered and divided and not on one accord. At some point, you have to be on one accord when you're going up against an adversary who basically is on one accord.
Yeah, that only happens. I think they can be one accord if we have enough people organized to push them. They're in many ways, elected officials of both parties are herd animals, and they need to be herded by their democracy works when people, the organized constituencies demand it. And that means individually, I mean, all the individual phone calls to members of Congress, that's great, and emails. What really helps is that, plus people getting organized together, because you have a lot more power together. And that's why people need to join groups like the group I lead, Cincinnati, Wisconsin, that do that. That is the core of democracy. It's more than voting. And so that is, I think that is absolutely essential. And I would say, you know, I gave Zoran Mamdani as an example, right, of someone who has a clear agenda, right? But it's not only someone like Mamdani. There are actually interesting cases of more moderate members who are saying much the same thing. So you could do it. You could do it with different kinds of policies. But the main thing is that we no longer can just deal with packaged talking points. People have to actually believe it, have heard it, right? So have you heard of this? Here to the Blue Dog Democrats, Earl?
Yes, absolutely.
They're the most conservative part of Democratic caucus within the House of Representatives. They used to be kind of like the Southern kind of, they used to call them Bo Weevil type,
yes,
that were not very liberal. They've actually rebranded. They're now kind of the rural Democrats. So one of them, Marie Glasscamp Perez from Washington, she's one of their leaders. She said recently, there was a big profile of her about her in the New York Times Magazine. So she said, you do not save democracy by running around yelling about saving democracy. You do it by demonstrating that democracy and democratic values deliver better quality of life for normal people. So that's a very conservative Democrat, and she's right on. So there it in some ways it just cuts differently than just ideology, right? She is saying what I'm saying, that the threat to democracy is in its actual fruits for people, not just in they're threatening democracy, do something.
You know, Dr. Craig, yeah, it's unfortunate, but we've come to an end for this morning. As always, Dr. Craig, undeniably great conversation with you, and it's more than conversation, it's an educational opportunity. I think every time you have an opportunity to grace these airways of civic media, so I'm so thankful that we continue to have this dialogue. And you know, we've got to be able to have you know, outlets like this to be able to have unfiltered conversations, and I thank you.
Thanks, Earl. It's an honor to be on with you, and I think it's wonderful that you grace the airwaves of civic media, and so I think your voice is essential. So it's a privilege and honor to be with you periodically.
Yes, sir. We'll see you the next time. All right. That's a wrap once again with what's going on with Earl Ingram.